My special guest is Roy Shoman. Roy grew up studying Judaism under some of America's most prominent rabbis, and having received degrees from the Harvard Business School, he taught at Harvard. His unexpected conversion to Catholicism led to a dramatic refocusing of his life, and he is the author of the book Salvation is from the Jews, recently published by Ignatius Press. Roy Shoman, welcome to Faith and Family.
Hi, I'm very happy to be here.
Now, I'm sure by the time I was halfway through your introduction, some of our listeners were wondering, how does a nice Jewish boy like yourself, growing up in a Jewish suburb of New York, end up a Catholic? I mean, let's hear the story.
Well, the short answer is because another very nice Jewish boy named Jesus wouldn't let me alone.
Okay. How did this transpire? Tell us a little bit about your childhood, your experience with Judaism growing up, and then let's shift then into your pilgrimage.
I had a very devout nature growing up. It was a gift from God, but I grew up with a love of God and a desire to know Him and to serve Him as much as possible. And I had full faith in the Jewish religion, so I sought to fulfill that yearning through Judaism, which is what brought me into contact with some of these prominent rabbis. I grew up in what's called conservative Judaism, which is fairly observant, but not the most observant and strict segment of Judaism. But then when I turned 16, 17, I actually got involved in Hasidism, which is pretty much the strictest denomination within Judaism, and even lived and traveled with a Hasidic rabbi who has had a very high profile and still has quite a high profile, even though he's now deceased, Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach, really trying to get an experience of God and to know intimacy with God as fully as I could. And I did have tastes of it. I did have flashes of it. I did have some experiential knowledge of the sweetness of the Lord, as the psalm says. But then I went to MIT, got involved in both the secular scientific mindset, which dismisses pretty much the idea of God, and also got involved with the contemporary moral norms of the 1970s, which are not really consistent with intimacy with God, and drifted into a kind of benevolent agnosticism, which is where I found myself.
You just very quickly went through your background, but you knew Judaism.
I knew Judaism probably more fully than at least 95% of American Jews. I did not know it as well as some, but I was not a kind of a, you know, cultural but not religious Jew.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go on with your pilgrimage.
So then I found myself going to MIT, going to Harvard Business School, doing extremely well at both places, and being invited to join the faculty of Harvard Business School. I think I was 29 or 30 at the time, which was quite a success, felt like.
That's the big stuff.
Having gotten the brass ring to be a professor at Harvard at 30. I was moved, if I may make a bit of a digression, when I heard Mel Gibson's testimony on a recent TV interview. I mean, he was much more of a success, but I had a similar kind of phenomenon, which is once I had everything which I thought should make me happy and satisfy me, the sense of emptiness becomes much more pronounced because you're not striving for something and you can't imagine what there is left to strive for, and yet that emptiness, that void inside is still there. And that is pretty much the state I found myself in. And in a lot of interior darkness and despair, I was walking in nature early one morning because that's where I found my solace. This was in the dunes of Cape Cod. And I received the single most probably spectacular grace of my life. It's hard to describe, but from one moment to the next, I sometimes describe it as saying I fell into heaven. I found myself in the immediate presence of God, who I knew was my God, my Lord, my Master. I knew that He had watched over every moment of my existence. I knew that everything that had ever happened to me had been the most perfect thing that could possibly have been arranged by divine providence, although I was unaware of it at the time. And I found myself looking back over my life in His presence as though I were looking back over my life after death. And I saw everything that I would be happy about and everything that I would wish I had done differently. And I was aware that the two things that I would most regret looking back on my life over death was all of the time and energy I wasted worrying about not being loved when every moment of my existence I was being held in a sea of love far more intense than anything I could imagine, although unaware of it. And the other great regret would be every hour that I wasted not doing anything of value in the eyes of God, in the eyes of heaven. I knew from one moment to the next the meaning and purpose of my life was to worship and serve this God who was revealing himself to me. The only thing I didn't know was his name and what religion to follow in order to do that. And so I prayed on the spot to know his name so I could love and worship him properly. I remember praying, let me know your name. I don't mind if you're Apollo and I have to become a Roman pagan. I don't mind if you're Buddha and I have to become a Buddhist. I don't mind if you're a Christian and I have to become Hindu. As long as you're not Christ and I have to become Christian.
Okay.
And so he respected that prayer because he didn't reveal his name to me. But then when I went back home, the experience, the state of consciousness faded, but the experience, of course, never faded. So when I went back home, I still, of course, knew the meaning and purpose of my life. And every night before going to sleep, I would say a short prayer to know the name of the God who had revealed himself to me on the beach.
At the same time, you would ask him not to reveal it to you.
That's right. That's right, which is why it took
a while. He honored your will.
He honored my will.
Yes.
But he worked slowly on bringing me around. Of course, he knew my interior will. So he presumably knew that after about a year, I was ready to hear the answer. And a year to the day after the first experience, I went to sleep. And I felt as though I were woken by a hand gently rocking my shoulder. I know that physically I was still asleep, that physically this took place in the context of a dream, but I can only describe it as I felt. And I felt like I was gently woken and led to a room and left alone with the most beautiful young woman that I could imagine. And to simply be in the presence of her love, of the love emanating from her, was to be in a state of ecstasy greater than I imagined could exist. I knew without being told that this was the Blessed Virgin Mary. And she said that she offered to answer any questions I might have. She said I could ask her any questions.
Wow. I wish I could have been there. Okay, what did you ask?
Well, I'll tell you, the first question I asked, I found myself in her presence. She was so exalted and magnificent that I was overwhelmed with a desire to honor her and to give some sort of obeisance to her. So actually, my first question, I didn't even know the Hail Mary. And I was painfully aware that I didn't know the Hail Mary because I knew if I knew the Hail Mary, I'd want to drop to my knees and say the Hail Mary. So my first question was, what's your favorite prayer to you? Because I wanted to know how to honor her. And her initial response was, I love all prayers to me. But I was Jewish. I still am Jewish, right? So maybe I was associated with being a little pushy. So I then said, oh, come on, you must love some a little more than others. And she relented, and she recited a prayer to me. And it was in Portuguese. And I knew without being told that the reason it was in Portuguese was because the Portuguese people had maintained a kind of a particularly like innocent devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary that was particularly pleasing to her. And I memorized the prayer phonically, I mean by sound, so that I would remember it the next morning. As soon as I woke up the next morning, I wrote it down phonetically. And I believe that the prayer that she told me was, Immaculate Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us sinners who have recourse to thee. And later, a Portuguese woman told me that that's the first prayer that Portuguese mothers teach their infants as soon as they're able to speak. So knowing that, I think that may have been one of the reasons why that prayer was particularly dear to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Anyway, I asked, I mean, it would take more than the hour to go through all the questions I asked, but she answered all of them most graciously, and then she spoke to me for about 20 more minutes, and then the audience was over. And the next morning when I woke up, I knew that it was Christ that I had met on the beach. I knew that I wanted to be as fully and complete and well a Christian as I possibly could. I still didn't know anything about Christianity. I didn't know what a Protestant was. I didn't know what a Catholic was. I didn't know, you know, anything. So I just looked in the phone book for a church, and I started out. Well, what else?
You did. Yeah, no, good for you. You have to do something. Okay.
But I'd go to a Protestant church, and I would shyly bring up with the pastor after I knew him a little bit, you know, what about the Blessed Virgin Mary? Because, I mean, I never fell out of love with her after that first experience.
Absolutely.
And when he would respond in a kind of insulting or dismissive way, which actually unfortunately happened, you know, I would say, I'm out of here. And I was hanging around Marian shrines out of my love for Mary. And, of course, the Marian shrines were all held by the Catholic Church. So over time, between my love for Mary and my desire for the Eucharist, because when I was at the shrines, I would be exposed to Masses, and I would really want to receive communion, and I knew that I wasn't allowed to. So between wanting to receive communion and my love for Mary, over about the course of 18 months, I was led to the Catholic Church.
Unbelievable. That's tremendous. Now, you mentioned in your book that you don't feel that the word conversion, although it's a common term, the word conversion may not be the best word or the most accurate term to describe a Jewish person who makes the pilgrimage to Catholicism. Why is that?
I think that's absolutely correct what you're saying. And it's one of the reasons I wrote my book is, in some sense, you could say that the book is a 350-page explanation of why it's not conversion at all, among other things. But the issue is not who we are. The issue is who Jesus is. If Jesus is and was the Jewish Messiah, then it's not conversion at all. There are only two kinds of Jews. There are Jews who are mistaken about who Jesus was, who are what society thinks of as Jews, and there are Jews who realize who Jesus was, who are essentially, quote, converted Jews, but they're not converting at all. They're just coming into the fullness of their own religion, into post-Messianic Judaism, if you will.
Now, after that testimony you just gave, and as a practicing Catholic, you still see yourself then as 100% Jewish. You haven't turned your back on Judaism whatsoever in your beliefs and in your heart of hearts and in your deepest recesses of your mind.
More than that, I'm much more Jewish than I could possibly have been without entering the Catholic Church.
In other words, I've heard it described, the entire Bible is promise, and that part of the Bible was given to us from the Jewish people. That's the Old Testament. The New Testament is fulfillment. And many Jews are waiting for the fulfillment. You have found it in Christ.
That's right. And the Catholic Church is post-Messianic Judaism.
That's a sentence to remember. The Catholic Church is post-Messianic Judaism. You know, and I'm jumping way ahead here, but I can't help but think that there's a reason you are given extraordinary graces. And I mentioned to our listeners that Roy's testimony is found in the back of his book, but also in the concluding section of your book, there's a number of striking testimonies. I mean, heaven seems very concerned, even at this stage of human history, to break through to Jewish people in the most remarkable ways. What I mean, you have to ask yourself, I know God broke through. I wasn't heading towards Catholicism. He broke through. You have to ask yourself, why did he do that? I'm sure you've asked yourself.
Well, I know where you're leading, but yes, it's very notable to me that virtually every Jewish conversion, in quotes, that I'm aware of, happened through miraculous intercession, usually involving the Blessed Virgin Mary. And part of the answer may be that the Jews, as the chosen people and as the first recipients of the covenant, there might be some special grace that God still gives them just out of respect for that covenant and who they are. But there is also that mysterious passage in Romans 11 that suggests that after the number of the Gentiles is completed, God will remove the veil from the eyes of the Jews, and they too will enter the church.